from Vision Australia Radio. It's time to open the cellar door and uncork a classic on Heard It Through the Grapevine.
Hello, I'm Michael Hintz, the velvety voice of Vino, with another Heard It Through the Grapevine. We're on Vision Australia Radio, of course, and coming to you nationally through the Community Radio Network. Great to be with you again. As I say each week, so many wines, so little time. And a hello from my producer, Lloyd Shirley. Today, my guest is Darren DeBortley, the entrepreneurial third-generation winemaker and current managing director of one of Australia's top producers, DeBortley Wines. Many will readily associate DeBortley with the Stella Sticky, the celebrated Noble One, Petritis Semillon. It's to wine what Seve Ballesteros was to golf, full of style, flair, and on top of its game. More on that later. However, there's much more to DeBortley than Noble One. Its genesis dates back to 1928, and it's very much the story of hard work, Italian enterprise, and sheer tenacity. From humble beginnings in the Riverina in southwestern New South Wales, it's evolved to today's family-run Venus Enterprise, making consistent quality wine at an affordable price. Today, Darren is going to shed some light on its colourful, adventurous family history, and in so doing, recount some of the memorable moments of the past. Recently, Oz Clark wrote The History of Wine in 100 Bottles. Well, Darren's going to take us through the history of DeBortley in a few less bottles. Darren, welcome to Grapevine.
G'day, Michael.
Where to start? Firstly, tell us about the DeBortley of today. How many acres under vine in total do you have? Because you're quite a big enterprise, aren't you?
We are, I suppose, in terms of the medium size family wine companies.
Yep.
It'd be roughly about, probably in the vicinity of probably 800 hectares.
Yep. And you've got vineyards and cellar doors in, I believe, in the Hunter, the Riverina, and the Yarra Valley, is that so?
Correct.
And what's your total on average? How many bottles of wine would you produce a year, all up?
Oh, that probably sort of varies between the seasons, but roughly in the vicinity of cases, probably 3 to 4 million cases.
That's a lot of wine, isn't it?
Yep, we lubricate some of the best mines in Australia, Michael.
Are there any mines, good mines left in Australia? I thought they'd all gone, you know, Germaine Greer and all those people, they'd left long ago. Any good mines left?
Well, the person I used that line was talking to, and I was talking about how he used to enjoy our wines in his younger days, is actually in Hong Kong, so you're probably correct.
And what percentage of your wine sells locally within Australia, and what percentage do you export? Because you export to over 70 countries, don't you?
Oh, we do, but we're predominantly an Australian-based producer, and most of our sales are in Australia, so it's roughly about three-quarters.
Yeah, three-quarters local, and yep. And tell me, what do people think of when they drink your wines? How do you regard your reputation? How do you think of yourselves?
We like to think that we're always offering exceptional value for money.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's a reflective of our size. Now, we can't sort of cater particularly to that exclusive upper end. And our strength is being able to offer very good wines at very good prices.
Yes, that's to me, you've hit on a good point here, Darren, because to me, despite popularity, and I know many people, including myself, drink your wines, they're often underrated or not given the recognition they deserve by some wine critics and media. I find that a bit puzzling, don't you?
Yeah, well, we had this conversation earlier, and sort of on reflection, I don't think that is the case. I think we do get very good support from the wine, from the media, per se.
Yeah.
I think it's probably the gatekeepers down from there that may have a bit of an issue with, but I think that's sort of, with time, is breaking down as well.
Good, good. Now, because your wines are first and foremost made to be drunk and enjoyed rather than talked about and analysed. You know, there's some wines that people pontificate on for an age, and you think by the time they're finished, you've gone to sleep, whereas your wine's really all about, you know, made to be drunk and enjoyed, which is the essence of wine, isn't it?
Well, exactly, and to have it with a meal and have it with friends, you know. It's the conversations should necessarily be about the wine, but about good times and family.
Yep. Now, noble one aside, what are your better-selling and more popular wines today?
Oh, we go from our sort of budget level, which is the Sacred Hill range,
mm-hmm.
and probably the Cabernet Merlot, Semillon, Sauvignon Blanc in that range, through to Windy Peak, which is probably, you know, our Chardonnay and our Shiraz from Heathcote, which is exceptionally popular.
That's very popular, isn't it?
Yeah, to our sort of up to our Yarra Valley estate ranges, which we're probably best known at that level, particularly for our Pinot Noirs.
Yes, yes. Now, it's the one thing that, to my mind, the Italians have brought to Australia, apart from the love of food and wine, it's a sense of sharing, family enterprise, fun, and above all, hospitality. That's what really... Now, put this together and you have La Tavola Lunga, the long table. That's pretty much your story, isn't it?
It is, and it's something that the family actually live by. You know, each of the my mother's got the long table, and all of her children have in their houses have a very long table,
mm-hmm.
and it's a wonderful way of sharing sharing good times and good food,
yes.
and of course good wine,
and yes. Now, what are the advantages and some of the challenges of keeping the company in the family, as it were? Because you're a family company, aren't you?
Correct.
Now, that must have advantages because you can move quickly and hopefully make decisions quickly. Are there any challenges involved in that?
Oh, I think it's a generational story because
yep.
as each generation, comes along, it becomes solidarity that exists as family members.
Mm-hmm.
It's to some extent sort of dissipates. So trying to keep the next generation involved and close is very important.
Yes, succession planning, I suppose. But you've got there are plenty of kids and people in your family, so that shouldn't be a problem, should it?
Well, we hope not.
No. Now, families often argue and are at loggerheads. For example, your father Dean often, sort of argued with his father Vittorio. And you with Dean, and now you're seeing, I've heard, the same ebullient trait in your son, Ben. On a positive note, that is. Tell me about this.
Of course. Well, I don't know about
Ben
argue.
Listen?
He does all the arguing. I do all the listening.
Do you?
I'm not quite sure about that, Michael.
Right. Do you regard yourself as a good listener?
I think so, too. Well argued.
Yep. And Ben's currently doing his vintage at your Yarra Valley winery at Dixon's Creek, under the watchful eye, of course, of the redoubtable Steve Webber. How's he going? That's Ben, of course.
Oh, he's enjoying himself down there. It's a wonderful place, obviously, very beautiful and very close to Melbourne, which I'm sure he appreciates.
Yes, and Steve Webber's no shrinking violet. How important is he to your continued success? And what do you rate as his greatest contribution, besides marrying your sister, Leanne?
Yeah, well, I always joke that the only way we could get a winemaker in the family that she had to marry one. But, his contribution is certainly in terms of style with the Yarra Valley wines particularly. It's been very important.
Yep.
That sort of development of the... and that's probably one of the, sort of where we are a bit different because our styles are very more European in style than those traditional sort of blockbuster Australian styles.
Yes, yes.
And hence probably the reason why we do so well with Pinot Noir.
Now, did you, you're of course done winemaking and you're a Roseworthy graduate in your own right. Did Steve learn much from you about winemaking or did you learn much from him? Was there a sort of cross-pollination there, exchange of ideas?
No, I think the pollination was general with,
yep.
sort of also all the winemakers we've had over the years.
Mm-hmm.
So wonderful people like David Slingsby Smith and...
He died, didn't he?
Yeah, he died. It was very tragic.
Mm. Mm. He mentored, of course, a few people.
Oh, he did. He was a bit of an institution, well-loved within the wine industry fraternity.
Yep, Yep. And, of course, Steve did much to rejuvenate the show judging system when he was chairman of judges at the Royal Melbourne Wine Show. He shook things up a bit, didn't he?
Oh, he did. I think he sort of probably took a more of a pragmatic approach.
Yep.
To the judging.
Yep. Now, he's very much a Pinot Noir man. What's your favourite wine? What wine do you gravitate to?
Oh, I'd say I'm sort of I enjoy anything that's very good, to be honest.
Yep. Yeah, so you don't have a favourite that you fall back on?
No, and for example, we've had the occasion from the King Valley, we've had absolutely sensational Sangioveses.
Yes.
And they really do remind me of top echelon Italian, those red. So, it really depends on the wine itself, which is what sort of drives my passion. And same with some of these Yarra Valley Shirazes. They really do remind me of those great Rhone reds. It's very, and obviously number one.
Yep.
Some of those vintages can be very exceptional.
Yes, yes. And, of course, your Dixon's Creek Winery and Vineyards and Cellar Door and Restaurant, they've long been a Yarra Valley mecca, haven't they? I remember when they opened, I think I went to the opening early in 1990, I think.
Yeah, oh, very, very early 90s, because we acquired the property in after the 86 vintage. So, and because we always felt that the valley had such a future, and now it's recognised as the number one wine region. It certainly wasn't that the case back in those days.
Yep.
And I remember going back a few years talking to one of our old bank managers, and who had lived in Melbourne, had moved to Sydney at that stage. And when we talked about moving into the Yarra, he was sort of horrified because his vision of the Yarra Valley back in the 50s was very different to what it is now.
Yes, of course. And Leanne runs Dixon's Creek like clockwork, I believe.
She's very much involved in the running of the restaurant and the marketing.
Mm.
And so the restaurant is doing sort of wonderful things.
And you have a matriarch as head of your family, your mother. Is she chairman of the company?
No, she's not the chairman.
Isn't she?
But she runs it.
She runs it. We better give her a, yeah. I know the feeling. Yeah, and of course, you've all got your brothers and everybody's active in the business. And on a personal note, I believe you love seafood and you're a dab hand at making a seafood salad. Although I believe you get your wife, Margot, to do the tedious work, typical man, of, preparing the prawns for it.
Yes, I once peeled a prawn, Michael.
Did you? Was that an event? Have you got that on? that was peel a grape, wasn't it?
Yes.
And look, have you given that children's cookbook you borrowed from your sister Leanne back when you were kids? She was given one for Christmas, and you used it. Have you given it back to her yet?
Yeah, I don't know about that, but would you believe? Mm. I think we bought a new edition of that for our kids.
Oh, right.
Yeah. So there's a long tradition of that children's cookbook going through the DeBortley family.
And I believe your ossobuco is to die for. If ever I'm up in your part of the world in winter, will you make me some? Or you could always come down to Dixon's Creek and take over the kitchen and the restaurant there, cook some there, and I'll bring a Sangiovese.
Yeah, it sounds like you've been speaking to my son.
No, I've got my spies everywhere.
My son's very adamant about me doing it as well as some of his friends, so yes.
Mm-hmm. And when you were at Roseworthy, what year did you graduate and who else did you come through in your final year at Rosemount with? Any other notable winemakers?
No, probably the sort of prominent guys and that generation going through, because it really was on the cusp of changes in the wine industry.
Yep.
And, that's from when we started, the morphing from a fortified wine wine industry to a to a table wine industry, and then to a premium table wine industry really was occurring in that period.
Right. Well, look, we're going to have a short musical interlude now, Darren, and I'll stay with us and we'll be back after this short break.
He was working through college on my grandpa's farm. I was thirsting for knowledge, and he had a car. Yeah, I was caught somewhere between a woman and a child. One restless summer we found love growing wild on the banks of the river on a well-beaten path. It's funny how those memories, they last like strawberry wine. 17, the hot July moon, saw everything, my first taste of love. When 30 was old, my biggest fear was September, when he had to go. A few cards and letters and one long distance call. We drifted away like the leaves in the fall.
Today, my guest is Darren DeBortley. Now, we were talking about Roseworthy, and I believe you used to terrorise slow pedestrians and wowsers in and around Adelaide in your Holden Blue Sandman in the late 70s. A bit of a reputation, I hear.
No, it was actually a Chrysler.
I thought it was a Holden Blue State Sandman.
No.
It was a Chrysler.
It was a drifter.
Oh, not true to the Holden tradition.
No.
Well, anyway, we got the blue right, and it was you, I believe.
That's right, correct.
You nearly ran over a friend of mine, I believe.
And who was that?
Oh, no, he's dead now. This is a long time ago.
Yeah.
Now, back to the Noble One. Well, before we get on to the Noble One, we'll take us through the flavour profile of this week's Wine of the Week, and it's your selection. What is this week's Wine of the Week, and tell us about it?
Well, I sort of contemplated, and there's a number of wines that we can talk about, but yep. I honestly I really do like the Sangiovese that we make from the King Valley, and one week will be our Bella Riva Sangiovese.
Bella Riva.
Yeah, beautiful river.
The beautiful river. Yep. King Sangiovese. Now, what's the, is that 12.5% alcohol?
12.5, 13%.
Yep, yeah. Sangiovese. And how would you describe that wine? Take us through it.
Well, it's just got those wonderful earthy, savoury flavours with that sort of classic Italian chalky palate.
Yes.
And so it's just wonderful flavour and something a bit different, and that's the reason why I thought I'd make that my wine of the week.
Marvellous. Now, how much... let's get on to Noble One, because I still think many people, when they think of your brand, the first thing they think of is that rich, unctuous, as I said, the Sefi Ballesteros of wines. Noble One. Take us through the birth of that and its popularity.
Oh, well, I suppose it goes back to my days at Roseworthy. I sort of fell in love with the sticky styles and very first... Butchertized Semillon I'd actually ever seen was the 75 Cute.
Oh, yes.
As a student, and that was, it's the good old days when the dollar was quite strong.
Yep.
And so these imported wines were quite affordable, and it was a sensational wine, fell in love with the style. And then a few years later, Roseworthy starts experimenting with Botrytis cinerea, otherwise known as Noble Rot.
Yes.
And, so that began with the fascination. And basically when I came home, I said to my father, I'd like to make one, and at that stage, people were using artificial methods and with temperature controlled rooms and humidity levels. And he said that we can get it naturally. So from there, it was the journey began, and our biggest, I suppose, the biggest decision that we made was in '82 to leave grapes hang on the vine until the season was ready for them, which usually occurs around mid-April.
Mid-April, yep. And it ages beautifully, doesn't it?
It does. It's now one thing about Botrytis, the flavours in that are very stable. So although the colours may change dramatically and may become a very dark colour, the wine itself is does not show those overly oxidised characters that you see with a lot of wines that can be over the hill.
And take us through some of your other in the de Bortoli history by naming some other notable wines you've produced over the years. Now, starting with the Vittorio Spumante back in the 60s, because people laugh now saying Spumantes, but back then that was considered a bit of a breakthrough and a sort of sophisticated wine, wasn't it?
Oh, they really were the Proseccos of their day.
Yeah, they were, quite right.
That led, I suppose, part of the consumer swing towards table wines, because, as I mentioned earlier, back in those days, nearly all the consumption was fortified wines, nearly 90%.
Yep. And any other wines come out as memorable in your history? Because the history of table wines really dates from the early 60s, doesn't it? And
The 60s with the red wine revolution that started, and then white wine revolution in the 70s. But over the years, we've always had sort of individual wines which have been very good. Obviously, best known for Noble One. We do make some exceptional fortifieds.
Yes.
Black Noble, for example, is a very unique wine using, again, Botrytis-infected grapes to make a fortified style.
And is that made out of the Hunter or at the Riverina?
Out of the Riverina.
Yeah.
And picked up the International Wine Show up in Hong Kong just late last year. Top fortified wine in the world.
Oh, congratulations. There we go. So more people should know about that.
Well, it is. It's a very esoteric sort of wine, unfortunately, because, people find it very hard to get their heads around.
Yeah. And, of course, you're a member of an organisation called Australia's First Families of Wine, and your story is depicted in, it's an excellent book by Graham Lofts called Heart and Soul. Tell me, what is the First Families of Wine all about, and what does it mean to you to belong to the First Families of Wine? Because listeners mightn't understand what it's all about.
Yeah, well, the first famous Hawaiian, I suppose, was really originally we all came together as because I suppose there was seen as a requirement in the industry for a group of dominant family wine companies that made exceptional wines to really showcase what Australia is really about in terms of international wine market. And
yep.
Because one thing about Australian family wineries is that we are rather unique when you consider we've got family wine companies going back to the 1860s, continual family businesses. There's really not many in Europe.
No, and speaking of that, I was speaking to young Viv Thompson from Best's, and he was saying that how helpful your father was, Dean, in helping him in the early days, and yet he's probably the same age, if not older, than Dean would be now. So just goes to show you, it's a small world, isn't it?
Oh, it is.
And Best celebrate their 150th birthday this year.
Yeah, no, it is, and certainly in the days back in the 60s and 70s, the industry obviously was a lot smaller and was truly a wonderful industry back in those days. It was just so friendly.
Yep.
And I think that's the element, that's the thing about the first families of wine, that camaraderie is, it has been maintained, and we basically, there is a consistency in thinking with most. It's fascinating that really there's not many contentious issues ever come up.
Right.
Because this really is this sort of groupthink, and not groupthink because we've conditioned each other to think that way, but just because that's the way we, being brought up in the industry, we do have this sort of common bond.
Yep, we're just about out of time, Darren. Look, thank you very much for your time today. It's been a pleasure talking to you. And as I say, learning about the rich history of your company, and I could recommend that book, Heart and Soul. It's a very, very good book. Thanks for speaking with us. Stay on the line, Darren, and we'll have a chat in a moment. Well, that's your lot for now. Next week, my guest will be the effervescent doyen of the Melbourne wine retailing and wine education, the irrepressible, indefatigable Phil Hude from Armidale Cellars. My research material is sourced from my home library and winebiz.com. This has been another Heard It Through the Grapevine on Vision Australia Radio, heard on all stations around Australia. It's cheers from me, Michael Hintz, and please drink moderately.
Heard It Through the Grapevine is a production of Vision Australia Radio. Sound information.